It's time for you to define your brand. This podcast is designed to arm you with the tools and confidence needed to build a standout brand in today's marketplace. I'm your host, Matt Crane, and I'm honored to be joined by my co-host and CEO of Rush Impact Marketing and Rush Impact Media, Jeremy Warner.
Matt, it's awesome to be here, and I'm excited to share and engage with our audience, listeners, and special guests that will be joining the show. Most importantly, I'm excited to help all of you take charge of your brand. Matt, you know what we say around here, your brand, your responsibility.
Well, welcome back to another episode of the Define Your Brand podcast. As always, I'm your host, Matt Crane, and I've got my man and co-host, CEO of Rush Impact Automotive and Rush Impact Media, Jeremy Warner. And today's episode, once we get into the guests, we'll need no introduction from there. But let me tell you something. Peak performance expert, agency chairman, World Financial Group, top business leader, team-made millionaire, prolific financial services, the Ed Milet Show. Spoiler alert, now you know who's on the show, right? But when you think about interviews that you know will make a difference in your life and your business, you got to look no further than Ed Milet. This $200 million entrepreneur, business coach, and mogul is bursting onto the scene with major players like Gary Vaynerchuk, Grant Cardone, Tony Robbins, and Lewis House. And what an honor it really is to have him join us on the Define Your Brand podcast. And one, I'm super excited to be able to share with all of you that listen each and every week.
You know, the biggest thing when we're bringing our guests and bringing these episodes here on the Define Your Brand podcast is we want to make sure that the content that we're sharing is content that you're going to be able to take into action right then and there, something that's going to make an impact in your life, something that's going to change who you are from your present into what it's going to be tomorrow. And Ed Milet is going to be that individual that's going to be able to make that change for you. So everybody head over to iTunes. Please, please share, review, leave us a comment. This is how we engage our feedback from you guys on how well we're doing during the podcast. So make sure you leave us a review. Ed, it's with great honor, sir. First, I want to thank you, you know, for being so genuine and so true. You know, we had a couple communications through Instagram on a DM, and you took the time to respond back to me. And I don't want to say it's immediately, but it was pretty quick. And there wasn't a moment that you didn't go back in your busy day to be able to engage with your audience. And, you know, that really shows you as a true gentleman, how humble you are, and you're always looking to help others. So I greatly appreciate that. My first question is that you talk about your father a lot on your podcast and how he was your first example of what it takes to succeed. Can you please share with our audience on how this has impacted your journey and how it's led to who Ed Milet is today?
Sure. Thank you for having me, gentlemen, both of you. It's great to be with you. I've followed your program for a while now, and I'm a fan, and I'm impressed. So it's great to be with you. My dad, you know, my father was a huge influence to me two ways, and the good way is probably the first thing to start with. What I learned from my old man, like a lot of probably the people listening to this, my dad comes from that generation where hard work was something to be respected and to be admired. And so I grew up in a house where, you know, by the time I got up in the morning, my dad was gone. And he didn't come home until late at night, and he worked weekends. And so my dad is the kind of guy that he's a better man than me, number one, in that his integrity level's through the roof. He'd give you the shirt off his back. He taught me about service. My dad taught me about being kind to other people. Politically, I'm probably a pretty conservative person. That tends to happen to you as you make more money. But I grew up in my dad's very liberal. And the good part of coming up in a liberal home is typically people that, you know, tendency to have that way politically. They just, you know, they care about people. They put people first. My dad's always rooting for the underdog. You know, he's always the type of guy. If there's a guy with a sign on the side of the road, my dad's giving him something. You know, I learned about giving. And, Same time, I've watched my old man get into a bunch of fights. He's a tough man at the same time. So I learned you can be a very tough man and protect your family and be very masculine at the same time, be kind and be gentle and be generous. But the biggest thing I learned from my old man is work, man. My dad is a hard worker, and it's just sort of, you know, something I've always adopted from watching. The other side, real quickly, though, was he's a big influence in my life because my dad had a real alcohol problem when I was a kid, as you know. And so I grew up in a dysfunctional household. Like many of your listeners, no family is perfect, you know. And so mine was the family with the alcoholic dad. And my dad got sober when I was a teenager, and he's been sober for now 30-something years. I'm very proud of him. But all of those things that come with dysfunction and alcohol or drug abuse in a family and the stress and the worry and the tension that many of your listeners would probably relate to, I grew up with. And so it wasn't always hunky-dory and peaceful in my home. In fact, it rarely was. There was always tension there. And so I learned what I wanted to do from my dad, and then, you know, certainly I learned what it's like if you make wrong choices too from my dad. So,
yeah, you know, I think it's so important that as we go through this podcast, for our audience and our listeners to understand, is that you're always going to resonate with someone. And the more and more, Ed, that I listen to you and I hear your story, like, it's just, it hits home with me, you know, because I didn't really think my dad was much of anything until about 2 years ago. And I remember Jeremy pulling me into the hotel room that he was in when we were on a trip, and my dad and I were really butting heads. And he says, man, whatever it is, you got to let it go. And I just remember calling my dad and telling him, you know, that out of everything he ever did or didn't do for me, I hope that I become half the father that he was. Because, man, he wasn't that great of a dad, right? He wasn't going to be the guy that just said, I loved you and came up to you with open arms. But, man, he understood what it meant to be a father. Mm. And I really appreciate you sharing that.
Wasn't it a great feeling, by the way, to, I don't know if forgive him is the right word, but just choose to take a meaning from your relationship with him that serves you, right? Because we say this all the time in our lives, it's not the events that define us, it's the meaning we take from them, right? And so that's, you know, a lot of people have dysfunction in their family or have a dad that's not that great, but the fact of the matter is that my dad happened for me. I'm 100% sure of that. The good and the bad that comes with knowing me now, a lot of that was defined by my old man. And so it's a great feeling to just put the right definition, take the right meaning from it. And then to have the courage to tell your dad that, by the way, I want to acknowledge that. That's huge. But certainly it's everyone listening to this has had some event happen to them where they had to make a decision about what it meant. And was that going to serve them, or was it going to alter the direction of their life? And they're going to replay that story the rest of their life as some excuse for them not to be happier, wealthier, more fulfilled, stronger, right? More influential. And I've decided, and it's just important because these events, my dad has cancer now, right? I'm losing my dad potentially. He's had 5 surgeries. He's done radiation. He's about to do chemo. And so I've got to attach a meaning to this season of his life that serves he and I too, right? And so I'm constantly looking at situations, thinking, what do I need to believe about this so that it serves me? And believe it or not, even my dad being sick has been good because I'm a pretty busy guy. And you know what? I probably would have taken these next 4 or 5 years and maybe taken my dad's time for granted. I travel a lot. I've got a big business. You know, I got speaking engagements. I got my own family. And you know what? It's caused me to slow down and pay a little bit more attention. It's caused me to appreciate him more. It's caused me to spend more time. And so in that way, it's served us that this has happened. It's brought us closer together. I'm grateful that my dad didn't die suddenly. And so I'm able to have those kinds of conversations you would have with someone you know may be leaving you someday that you wouldn't have if they left you immediately. And so there's all kinds of blessings, ironically, in this cancer that he's suffering from. So it's the meanings we take.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. Well, you know, we talked a bit briefly before we started this podcast, Ed, and, you know, one of the things that you and I share individually is the fact that at a young age and then obviously into our youth and our young adult life is we really felt that athletics was going to be what defined us. And you had aspirations of being a professional athlete, same as I did. And unfortunately, that dream essentially was shattered due to an injury. And, you know, but I think from there, Ed, that injury you know, it forced you to reprioritize your life. It really forced you to change what you were and really assess things for where you are now and where you wanted to go based on the fact that, hey, what you knew at the time being an athlete and everything you'd worked for, all that grit and grind, it was really gone. You know, talk to our audience and share with them, you know, what you really had to do to reprioritize your life and how it's really helped define where you are today.
Yeah, well, I had a great – I'll tell you, I played Division I college baseball. I got a chance to get drafted to go play professionally, and it just ended. The dream ended. And so, like everybody, frankly, many of us, our first dream ends. It could be our first dream business, or we were going to be an athlete. It could be a relationship we were in. It ends, you know, and then where are you? And for me, when that dream ended, I did struggle for a while. I lost my footing a little bit. I was completely wrapped up in the ego and the dream and the belief that that's what I was going to do. You know, now again, that career ending ended up happening for me in hindsight. Isn't that true, by the way? Always in hindsight, 5, 10 years later, we look back at these traumatic events and we go, well, I'm glad that happened. That changed me. That caused me to do this. It's always in hindsight. The key to life is doing it in the present. If you can make those decisions in the present and not wait 5 and 10 years to understand the real meaning, that's the key. And so I didn't recover very quickly, but what did happen, I'll tell you a very quick story, very fast. I was struggling. I was broke. I had moved back home with my family. I'd actually moved in my mom and dad's house again with my college degree. I was sleeping in the same bedroom, same teddy bear on the bed, same posters from high school, right? I mean, I'm talking about like really low. And I couldn't find a job. And my dad had gotten sober, right? My dad had gotten sober. This is how my business career started. And so my dad was sober and he was going to meetings that many people go to when they get sober. And he came home from one of those meetings. He goes, I got you a job. Tomorrow morning, you're showing up at McKinley Home for Boys in San Dimas and you got a job. And I'm like, what is McKinley Home for Boys? I don't know, but a guy at my meeting's hiring you. Right. So I go down to this place the next morning, 7 o'clock. It's $6 an hour pay, by the way. I go down there. I say, hey, my name's Eddie Milette. I'm here for the job. They're like, what job? And I'm like, I don't know. They're like, well, who decided to hire you? And I said, I don't know. They said, let me get this straight. You're here for a job. You don't know what it is. And you have no idea who hired you. I go, well, I know the guy's name is Tim. Right. And the guy goes, Tim who? And I said, I don't know anything about him except he's an alcoholic. And the guy goes, oh, Tim, of course, Tim. Everyone knew Tim the alcoholic. So what happened was I ended up getting hired. I met Tim and he hired me that morning. I ended up working with boys. And McKinley is a, for lack of a better word, it's a gigantic campus group home. Most of my boys were orphans or wards of the court, meaning they were taken from their home because they were molested by their own family. And so I literally moved into a home on a campus of homes of young boys. And my boys were 7 to 10 years old. And I became like their father, their big brother. I spent holidays, Christmases with them, these precious little boys. All of them came from dysfunctional families, kind of like me, but worse. And my life changed in the 2 years that I was there. Because all of a sudden, from being this selfish, ego-driven athlete, I fell in love with these little guys, man. And I fell in love with making a difference in their lives and serving them and giving myself to other people. And all of a sudden, what I wanted out of my life in my early 20s changed from wanting to be famous or rich or powerful into I knew what made me happy. It was amazing. It was a blessing. What made me happy was serving people, was making a difference in these kids' lives, was loving people and caring about them and believing in them. And it made a huge shift for me. And so ironically, my dad being an alcoholic, that he got sober, served me, didn't it? Because it got me into this life. My losing my baseball career, had I played 5 or 6 years in the minors and then got released like most guys do and lost, I found what I loved quick. And it was making a difference in people's lives. And then from there, while I worked there, someone introduced me to the financial company that I ended up coming to work for. But I took those same principles from serving these boys into the business world. And it kind of made me a little bit unique in business that I was this leader, you know, kind of an intense dude. But I was a leader who was always about helping, always about believing, always about serving and caring. And it altered the direction of my life, spending time with those little guys. And many of them, those boys are still in my life today.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. That's God's favor in my life. That's my belief, right? But my life happened to me. If my dad wasn't a drunken alcoholic when I grew up, he would have never got sober, would have never been at that meeting. I would have never ended up at McKinley. Simultaneously, if my big dream would have happened, I don't end up on that my dad's back at my dad's house for him to have that conversation with me. And so it all happened for me. The universe, the world was conspiring for me. I just needed to know it. And so I did, and I do.
Wow, that's powerful. You know,
yeah.
You were talking about how your first dreams ends and you know, certain situations in life, you know, lead you to the path that you're on, and that's a journey along the way. And you know, one thing that, I like coaching younger guys. I like taking individuals that haven't had the opportunity to have success just because they haven't had the right guidance or they haven't had the right information in front of them to really, you know, go down the right path. And, you know, one thing with me, because, you know, I grew up in a really tough situation. My dad was in the Army. My mom is Korean. I came over here in the States when I was 2 years old. My mom and dad got a divorce at a young, young age. My mom couldn't speak English. So my mom gave myself and my sister to my dad. And then my dad brought us to Cincinnati, Ohio, where we were at. But, you know, I grew up poor. We grew up on food stamps. I shared a bedroom with my sister in a trailer all the way up till middle school. And then we were from home to home to home to home, you know, trying to find the cheaper rent and just trying to survive. So, you know, those struggles in life and the way that my father was with me during that time, you know, it defines who you are. And the biggest thing that I try to teach, you know, the younger guys that come within our business and people that I cross is, you know, you got to understand that your struggles, those are your life lessons. And those life lessons are going to make you stronger as an individual. That's going to help and lead and guide to who you're going to become. So, you know, all those things that you just shared really, really hit a home and really, you know, make an impact. And
what they are is they, you're right, because what they do is they're like deposits in this basket, right? Then you have something to give. If everything is smooth sailing, what do you really have to give to people?
Correct.
Right? And so these were deposits being made. These gifts were being given to me so that I could give them away. I think about this, for example, how crazy it is. You're so right about what you just said. I probably would have not been the right guy to be with those boys had I come from a perfect family. But I didn't come from a perfect family, so I knew what it was like not to have a dad there every night. I knew what it was like to have stress and strife in your home. I knew what it was like as a little boy to kind of cover for your family in public. I knew all the things, many of them, not all of them. Some of their situations were far worse than mine. But I knew what that was like, and they knew I knew, right? So these tests you have end up, they really do, it's hokey. But your tests, if you do it right, become your testimony. They become your testimony. And that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
As long as the story turns out a win, it's a testimony.
Correct. And that's one thing that you speak a lot on your podcast. And, you know, I listen to a lot of individuals on podcasts. I'm always looking for new mentors, new individuals to coach me so I can learn from everybody. I'm all about gathering information. And you have three episodes of your podcast that I cried at. I'm an emotional guy. I'm 6'5", 245, and I'm an emotional guy just because that, like, everything I do, I have so much passion into it. I really want to help and serve and make people better and make the best version of them. But three episodes, Lewis House, you know, obviously the situation that he dealt with at a younger age that he kept secret for 30 years. Tim Grover, when he shared that story with his father, where they came over from Europe and he was in that taxi ride and he made the taxi driver stop because that's all the money that he had. And he told the taxi driver, hey, I want to share this moment with my son. We're going to walk the rest of the way. And Tim, for the longest time, didn't know that that was the last money that he had to him. So those two episodes really impact me. So Ed, I went back and I started back from last year, your podcast episode, and really started diving in and listening and learning and training, you know. And your episode, Unlocking Your Success Code on February 1st, 2017. You talk about emotions and how emotions are the driving force of our life.
Yeah.
The most powerful emotion is gratitude. You talk about being grateful and how it's the antidote to almost all fears and pains.
Yes.
There's a story that you have that you talk about in that episode, okay? Now, please share with our audience a story about your mother-in-law, Patricia. How she is such a grateful woman, how her strength and faith and love and her reaction to her husband changed you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying about the podcast, too. I've had all these high testosterone guys on there, Tony Robbins, right? Grant and Andy Frisella and Grover and Lewis was a pro football player. And everybody always says they think it's going to be these big bashings of, you know, who's got more testosterone. But what ends up happening is we get real emotional and I end up pulling stuff out of these guys that they might not share otherwise. And so I appreciate you acknowledging that. I'm a gratitude addict. I was just interviewing someone else a couple hours ago and I was saying on that program, I'm addicted to gratitude. It's my, you know, gratitude can encompass love, faith, you know, all that stuff. Gratitude is such a powerful emotion. I'm always looking for things to be grateful for. And I learned that of all my mentors, because I've known Tony 20 years, right? And I'm a product of having great coaches and mentors basically all my life, from my sports days into my business days. But I didn't learn this from them. I learned this from my beautiful mother-in-law, Patricia. And Patricia is the most godly. You all have someone like this in your life. When I describe her, you're going to picture yours. She's the most godly, sweet, Christian, gentle, kind person I've ever met in my life. You all know that person, right? Well, that's Patricia. She reads her Bible every day. She loves the Lord, man. And she loves going to church. She loves to worship, right? She's going to heaven, right? She's going. But she has this addiction that she doesn't even know she has. And it's this, is that she sees the Lord in everything. She's constantly in a state of gratitude. And so I'm telling you, man, I live here at the beach. Everybody comes and goes, wow, look at this ocean. I'm looking at it right now as I'm talking to you guys. I'm watching the waves crash, right? Look at your house. What's this worth? You know, my mother-in-law will walk in and go, thank you, Jesus, for such a beautiful day. You know, the Lord made that ocean. And she just lights up, right? It could be the wind blowing. Thank you, Lord. She sees the Lord in everything. I mean, like every little thing she appreciates and is grateful for. And I mean, more than anybody I've ever known. They weren't wealthy, you know. And as a result, I think God brought me into her life and other people. She's just well cared for now, right? But she's just in constant state of gratitude. Well, when my father-in-law died, who was a great man too, I remember everybody was breaking down because he was this, you know, the backbone of the family. And she was in such a state of gratitude and peace about it. And she was grateful that my father-in-law was a football fan. My father-in-law died like this. I'll just tell you real quick. He was in the hospital for a very minor situation. And he was a lay minister, so he would preach on Sundays. And anyway, he was laying in the hospital bed with his sweetheart next to him, my mother-in-law. And his favorite football team, the Chicago Bears, was on the TV. He was feeling great. And he asked my mother-in-law, who was holding his hand, can you grab me the church hymnal for the week? He wanted to read the church newsletter for the week. And she reached over to grab the church newsletter. And when she turned back around, he was gone. He passed away. We think of probably an aneurysm. And he was gone in that moment, shockingly. And my mother-in-law, everybody's breaking down. My mother-in-law says, thank you, Lord. I'm so grateful. And she started listing all the things this is in the moment she just lost the love of her life. And when I say the love of her life, they're the type of people, you'd come over to their house, they were slow dancing in the living room when you weren't there, right? He held her hand everywhere. I mean, you talk about a romance, unbelievable. This was her whole life, right? And she immediately went into gratitude. Lord, thank you for taking him so peacefully. Thank you for letting me hold his hand as he passed away. I'm so grateful that he was watching football and we were talking about church. It was the perfect passing. She was in a total state of gratitude. You couldn't get her to be sad. And she stayed in that state. She has moments of where she's mourned. She has. But I've watched this woman go through that process stronger and better. You lose your life mate, right? You can't be more lonely. There's no one else in the home. She had to drive back to the house they raised their family in with all the pictures on the walls, right? Grateful. Grateful. And she found the things in that moment to be grateful for and a type of strength that I've never seen before. And it reminded me, if she can be grateful in what is arguably the worst moment of someone's life, I can certainly find some grace and find gratitude in some of these small things that come up that I think are stressful. And so that's what happened when my father-in-law died.
That's, you know, it's such an impactful statement. It is gratitude, and you know, it's such a mindset, and it's such a belief system. It's more than just being thankful for when something goes right in your life, or when, you know, something that you needed to have happen, particularly that week, got you through that week, man. It's such a state of being. And, you know, I really want to backtrack really quick, Ed, before I go into the next question, but something that you said earlier that I hope everyone really sticks to, and it makes me think of my own children. And it talks about when you said it's only your first dream, right?
Yeah.
Like, I just think back on how many dreams my children are going to have. You know, right now, my sons, their dreams are to be like me. Hopefully that sticks.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're probably going to want to dream to be an athlete, or they're going to want to dream of this. And I really think it's so important how you said the key to life is doing it in the present, not waiting those 5 years afterwards wondering what happened. That's so, so, so impactful, because for me, I know I tell Jeremy this all the time, I firmly believe that my injury slowed me down enough to be in position for my overall dream, and that's to now be married to my wife, Tammy, and now be a father to my two boys. And I probably wouldn't have achieved that had I went on and played professional baseball. So I think that's just so, so impactful and such a profound statement that you said there.
Well, there's two perspectives, right? I meet people all the time that are saying to me, hey, I'm overcoming. They have this worldview where life's about overcoming things, right? They don't even know they're doing it sometimes, but you know, I'm fighting the good fight. I'm overcoming. I'm going to plow through it. You know, they have this worldview like things, like adversity supposed to be thrown at me, and I'm supposed to somehow fight through it. Well, let me tell you something. There's going to be negative things happen. Of course, I just did a video this morning about undertow in the ocean. I said, hey, for every great wave that crashes, right when that happens, the nature, the law of the world tries to pull you back, the undertow of life, to where you came from. So there's obviously this ebb and flow. I'm just more focused on the wave than I am the undertow. And I have this overriding belief that the waves will eventually be bigger than the undertow pulling me back. And as long as I'm constantly getting closer to the shore, that's progress. And progress, this is the truth. Progress really is happiness. There is no destination other than, if you're a person of faith, getting to heaven. But while we're here on earth, progress is happiness. It's the chase. It's the pursuit, right? And at least for me, I've decided that the world is working to help me, and I've made that decision that that's what I'm going to be looking for in my life, and so I do.
The world is working to help me.
Woo. It is, and it's not always apparent in the moment. You have to make a decision about how you're going to go through your life. You should decide it right now listening to this. Are you always going to be overcoming things and fighting the world? Is that what you want the rest of your life? And I'm not saying, I do believe life gives us what we'll fight for, except I actually believe that it's an opponent that's defeatable. My daughter, I'll give you an example. You talk about first dreams, right? We're having dinner the other night, and my son is a sweetheart. He's a good boy. He's kind, and he reminds me of my father-in-law, right? My daughter is more like me. She's pretty spunky. She says what she thinks, and every once in a while, her mouth says some things that she shouldn't say. And I suffer from that too. And so the other night at dinner, and she'll just say whatever the heck she thinks. She doesn't care who her dad is or who thinks he's important or whatever. She could care less, right? So we're at dinner and she goes, hey, Dad. In the middle of the dinner, she goes, you know you're going through a midlife crisis, right? And I looked at her. I went, what did you just say? She says, Dad, come on. You've grown out the beard, all the pictures on Instagram. It's a midlife crisis. And I said, Bella, baby, you're right. It is. Because the last thing your daddy wants to be is the same man at 46 as he was at 45. And I said, boo, daddy went through a 20-year-old crisis too to give you a better 21-year-old. I went through a young man crisis. I went through a adolescent crisis. My son and I were at a car wash one time when he was little. He was 6 years old. I used to see this man there all the time. And I didn't mean to say this back to him. But he said, like a lot of people say to you with your kids, he said to me, enjoy that six-year-old, because when he turns seven, the six-year-old's gone forever, right? And boy, by the way, better enjoy it when he's seven, because when he turns eight, that seven-year-old is gone forever. And all parents listening to this are nodding right now, because we've seen this with our children, right? And I unconsciously said back to him when he said that, I didn't mean to be hurtful. I said, sir, when did that process stop for you? And he just stared at me. And I thought to myself, I don't ever want that to change. I hope the 21-year-old's gone forever and there's a new 22-year-old. And I hope the 22-year-old's gone forever and there's a new 23-year-old. And right now, Bella's right. There's a 46-year-old and I'm hoping he's gone forever when I'm 47 and there's a dadgum better version of me. Constantly getting better, constantly evolving. And so people that are listening to this, if you get anything out of this, when did that stop for you? And it usually stops somewhere around early 20s. If you're lucky, maybe you get to your mid-20s. But some point in most people's lives, the 25-year-old is the same woman the 24-year-old was for the most part. And guess what? Her life looks the same. And when she comes 2 years later, if the 28-year-old is sort of relatively the same confidence level, influence, work ethic, thoughts, visions, dreams, it's all the same, then her life's going to look the same. And so, yeah, that was my first dream. I've only had 1,000 dreams since then. And so I'm glad baseball ended. I don't harp on that. I've had 1,000 other dreams since then, right? And so for all of you listening to this, if that process stopped for you, I recommend a midlife crisis. If you're young, I recommend a young life crisis. Whatever age you are, I just read about Tom Brady. He said, I'm not trying to get better. He said, I'm in a crisis to get better. And that's why he's 40 years old and playing in his 8th Super Bowl, because it's a crisis. It's not something he'd like to do or he's going to investigate or he's going to, you know, maybe get around to. He's in a crisis to getting better. And I am in a crisis in my life to get better. So I want to share that with everybody. Yeah, that dream's over, but it's 1,000 dreams ago. And you, whatever your last dream, your last relationship, that was the 25-year-old you, the 35-year-old, the 55-year-old you. What's this you's dreams? This version of you, what's your new dream? What's your new vision? What's your new self-confidence? Your new ability to communicate? Your new story? Forget your old story. We already played that story. We already read that one. Who wants to watch this? I'm the type of guy, when I see a movie, I'm always fascinated. I go watch the same movie 20 times over. I already watched it. I don't want to watch that movie again. And I already watched that movie last year in my life. I have no interest in replaying it again. So there you go.
I love it. Well, this is a perfect segue into my next question, because the next question is basically what we're experiencing right now on the Define Your Brand podcast. You know, Ed, one of, if not your big thing, is talking about maxing out. And what you really did just right then is you're helping our audience max out. And I'm maxing out as we speak. But I want you to elaborate just a little bit further. You know, you have a passion, like you said, for mentoring and coaching others on what it really takes to be a champion in all areas of their life. And if you could really kind of dive deep a little bit more on what it means when Ed Mylett says max out.
Well, that's a hard one. The reason I say it's a hard one is it's such a difficult thing to define, because I don't know that you'll ever know you reached it, right? And so I have this crazy hallucination that when I get to heaven, that the Lord's going to introduce me to the man I could have been, the man I was destined to be, right? And so I just believe that. And so when I get there, I want to be very familiar with him. I want to feel like I had been him for some time. I think the worst life would be that when we die and we meet the person we were capable of becoming, or the one we were supposed to be and born to be, and they're a total stranger. So maxing out your life at the end, the ultimate definition of maxing out your life means that at the end of your life, whenever it is, that you are introduced to the person you are capable of becoming, your capacity, your destiny, and your familiar. That's maxing out, is that I actually meet that person and we're best friends. Not maxing out would be I'd meet the person I was born to be, destined to be, could have been, was made in the image and likeness of, and we're strangers. And so along the way to getting there, I think you have to max out your experiences. And so what I mean by that is, if I'm going to go to the gym, I don't want to have a good workout. I just put an audio about this. Too many times this year already, people have said, how was your workout? How was your meeting? How was your speech? And I've said, good. And I finally caught myself the other day. I said, geez, look, how many times am I going to say good? Good sucks. Good is for the average. Good is not going to get me to that version I want to have a maxed out speech. Like, I hit my peak at this time. It's all I got. My time with my kids. How was your time with your kids at dinner? Good? Really good? Who wants good? Good gives you an average life. I want a maxed out day with my kids. Joyful, fun, memory, something to remember forever. And so I'm in the pursuit of maxing out all the time. And it's just a standard, because we get in our life what our standards are, right? If my standard's good, or my standard is unknown, or my standard is I'm going to try, well, we already know what that's going to look like. But if everything I do, this podcast, I'm sitting here, when we started, my intention is to max out answering your questions for someone listening to this that it affects them. And if I bring anything less than my max out answer, my max out intention, they get less of me than I could give them. And so this hour, we will max this thing out. And when this is done, I got something else I'm about to go do. And I will go into it, go and max this out. Now, do I always do that? Of course not. I'm a human being. I have as many or more faults and frailties as anybody listening to this. And it's probably because I am so aware of my deficiencies. I am introverted. I'm very shy. I grew up in an alcoholic family. I'm a little guy. I'm loaded with insecurities, right? So it's because of that, that I must set high standards. I have to work on myself because I'm coming from such a low place in self-esteem, right? And so I'm always trying to max out. If I go to the gym, I hate having a good workout. Most people either go, well, at least it wasn't bad. I don't want at least it wasn't bad. I was not born, nor were you, for at least it wasn't bad. Can you imagine if you stack up enough at least it wasn't bad days, what the end of your life looks like? Are you going to meet the ultimate version of you? No. At least it wasn't bad leads to a life where no one ever remembers you lived, including your own grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I don't want that life. I was put here for a reason. I was put here to make a difference. I was put here to make a change. Small or big, I was put here to do it. And so that's what maxing out means. It's not settling for less than my best. And by the way, last thing I'll say, it will start out for you as a slogan, and then it'll become something you repeat, and then it'll become something you embody, and then eventually it will become your habit, and then long-term, it will become your identity. And you will just find yourself a year from now going, wow, I really maxed that out. And you'll start saying it unconsciously to yourself. People say it to me all the time that don't even know it's my saying. I catch them. And so that's what maxing out means to me.
Wow. That's powerful. You know, I love the statement that you said, the man that I could have been. And, you know, we've all seen that video of Matthew McConaughey, and he's up there getting his Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club, and he makes the famous speech. You know, they're asking him, you know, who you chasing, you know, what's your motivation to get to that point? And he's always saying, I'm chasing myself 10 years from now. And always.
Well, I haven't seen that. I need to look that up. I need to see that. That's.
Oh, it's unreal. It's unreal. Definitely one you definitely would enjoy. And then Gary Vaynerchuk always talks about, you know, the one biggest disappointment in your life, and going back to what you're talking about, why people don't take every single hour, every single day, every single thing that they do, regardless if it's work, spending time with your family, going to the gym, doing all those things to max out. You know, I approach every day, and I go to bed every day. Then the first question I ask myself is, did I give everything I could have that day in every single component of my life, not just with work, but everything? And Gary Vee talks about this all the time. You don't want to get to the age of 80 or 83 or 85, 90, whatever it is, and live with regret because you didn't max out every single moment of your life.
Yeah, and I call that the rocking chair test. I don't want to end up in my rocking chair someday looking back with regret. Not that I didn't achieve things, that I didn't try, that I didn't give it my best effort. I can't always control the outcome, right? I can't control every single outcome, but I can control my effort. I control my expectation. And there's a power to just intending to max out. There's a power to intention, and it's infectious, and it's a muscle, and you build it, and you get better at it. And it's okay if you're listening to this and you don't do it right now. Because guess what? There was a point where I didn't. Think about this for a second. Where did I come up with this? Usually you come up with something out of the lack of it, right? And so I had an epiphany when I started to realize I'm not maxing out anything in my life. I'm doing pretty good. The outside world at some point thought, hey, this guy's pretty successful, or this guy's pretty this, or you're in pretty good shape, right? And other people would tell me how good I was doing. And I remember just never feeling that it was true. And someone goes, well, that's because you're hard on yourself. And the truth is, it's not. The truth is, it's because I know what I'm capable of. And the cool thing about maxing out is you will discover new levels that you never thought you were capable of if you practice this long term. There are certain areas of my life where I am definitely not maxing out. Believe me, I need to improve. But in the areas where I have, it is shocking to me where my capacity is now compared to where I thought it was before I started. It's mind-blowing. And most people that are listening to this have had some area, whether it be their faith or their family or money or a business or a sport, they've touched it before where they went much further and higher and better than they thought they could by having small max outs along the way. The key thing is, can you extend that through a life in every area?
Wow. You know, we talk about bringing, you know, valuable content, and obviously, you know, our podcast is Define Your Brand, and every question Ed has hit on how you can define who you are and how you can define yourself to be better. And you know, one thing I want to share real quick, and if you don't mind sharing, Ed, is, you know, your podcast at the end of last year, it's called Design Your Life, Max Out Goal Setting Strategies. Okay. And you talk about how, you know, Max Out went from a slogan to something that, you know, developed into a habit and then become your identity. Can you share with our audience some of the goal settings that you do daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, that can help them create the habits that they need to become their new identity?
Yeah. Are you talking about specifically some of the goal setting strategies?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that has to happen when you're setting goals is this, is that your brain is a computer. So if we're going to be tangible, specific things, your brain can't process vanilla items or generics. And so the greater specificity with which you set goals, I mean, really specific, the more your brain can go to work on attracting to you and finding the people, places, and resources. It's a fact. It's a thing in your brain called the reticular activating system. I'm not going to get too detailed, but it basically is the thing that screens out everything in the world that's unimportant to you and only shows you the things that are important. It's why when you buy a new car or get involved with a new product or something, you'll see it everywhere all of a sudden, don't you? And the reason for that is it was always already there, but now it's important to you so your brain sees it. It could be a blue van three lanes over on a freeway. All of a sudden you see it, and you see them all the time. They were always there, but it wasn't important to you before, okay? So that's why specificity is critical. I don't want to lose weight. What's the exact amount of weight? All right, what's your exact body fat? I want to save some money. I want to be rich. I want to be financially independent. No, what's the exact dollar amount and the exact time? If you don't have a time set on it, there's nothing that's urgent about it. So that's number one, be specific. Number two, set deadlines on it. But most importantly, I'll give you a little tip. Program it in your phone to remind you or in your day timer. So throughout my year, I've pre-programmed in there. You know, I'll give you one example. I want to weigh 188 pounds by June 1st. That's one of my goals for the year. I'm pretty close to that, but I'm not there yet. There are reminders going off in my phone I've pre-programmed. So like April 1st, one goes off and goes, hey, you've got 3 months to go towards your goal. Are you there? You should be 75% of the way there. So I have little things that remind me about the deadlines throughout the year. That's important. Then one other thing I would tell everybody is this, is that, and by the way, I do read them in the evening and I read them at night. It's just something that I do habitually. I can see goals in my mind. But one thing I also have is I have a word for the year that defines my year. So I have all these things I'd like to do, my goals. But a biggie for me is my year, it's my identity for the year. So I pick a word for the year, whether it's intensity, passion, it could be faith, gratitude, whatever your word is, giving, right? Confident, whatever I have a word for the year, and I embody that word for the year. And there's a power to it. It's amazing that for that year, like this year, I changed my word right at the end of the year, but my word this year is gratitude. And I'm a gratitude addict, and I'm finding myself, just because of that, I have all these goals with deadlines that are specific, but I'm also finding myself, I am picking up little things here and there I'm more grateful for. because it's my word for the year. I am gratitude this year. I am grateful. And so yours could be intensity, power, recruiting, in a certain income. It could be whatever, influence, contribution. It could be recognition, right? It could be whatever it is, but pick a word for the year on top of your goals. That's the next thing I'd share. And go listen to my podcast on it. It'll help you.
Wow. Well, you know, I think it's really powerful that you went from saying word for the year to identity. Like, I think that's that's very impactful, because you really are an identification of the things you associate with, right? So if you're going to speak something into existence, you better be able to say, this is who I am, or this is what I am, because at the end of the day, that's what other people, that's what you're surrounding, and that's what your environment's going to associate with you with. And I think that is extremely, extremely powerful, especially, Ed, in today's social media and online presence, where everybody's got an identity they say, or a brand they say. Are they really speaking that brand into existence, and are they really the identity of that brand or that word? Extremely powerful there. I don't know about you, Jeremy, but man, I don't really know what to do here, because, you know, Ed, I'll tell you the facts here, big guy, is that we've had the honor of creating some major relationships with some very, very major people. And, you know, for us being that podcast and that company that's really, you know, we're really pushing the envelope every single day to get to the next level. And Jeremy is an incredible leader and someone every single day that's pushing us and guiding us and leading us. Someone like you that comes on this show and delivers the information that he delivers, just, man, it just really shows us, at least with me, that, man, I'm just so grateful to be in this position. You know, all those moments where I felt like quitting, all those moments where I didn't think I was making enough money, all those moments where the travel sucked, all those moments where I didn't understand this or didn't understand that. Ed, I just got to tell you, big guy, it's moments like this that let me know that, man, I'm proud that I stuck it through. I'm proud that I'm continuously driving forward, and I'm just super thankful that 3 years ago, this guy to my left here, you can't see him right now, but Jeremy made that cold call, so to speak, to me in my driveway, because I would miss out on this blessing. And that's exactly what this has been for me, Ed, is a blessing.
Thank you, brother. I'm proud of you too, and I'm grateful for it as well, both of you.
Well, you know, one thing I want to share with the audience real quick, and we talk about dreams and, you know, how every day is, it's for me, every day I have a new dream. I have a new goal. I got a new identity. I want to become and, you know, be the best version of myself. You know, I want to give everybody out there hope that if you believe and you have massive action behind what you believe, things will happen. You know, Grant Cardone was a big mentor of mine for going on now 5 years. And for the first 2 years, I just sat back and did nothing. Then the third year, I decided to make a decision that, you know what, I'm going to start engaging with Grant. I'm going to start communicating with him. And then along that way, we developed, you know, a friendship. I met him in New York. I did Snapchat podcast. I did a Snapchat geo filters for him. And along that way, I've earned his respect because I'm providing value to him just like he's providing value to me. And I share this story with everybody because I want everybody to understand that you got to believe. At the end of the day, you got to believe that things can happen to you, but you have to put massive action behind it. And this podcast right here happened for one reason and one reason only. I engaged with Mr. Mylett on Instagram. I listened to his podcast, and then you know what I did directly after that? I sent him a message through DM on Instagram asking for the opportunity to come to our podcast. We don't have 1 million downloads. We don't have, you know, we're not in the top 100. We're not trending. We're not doing anything. But one thing that we are doing on the Define Your Brand podcast is bringing on guests, and we're actually putting out strong, strong content that's going to impact and help people. So, you know, I want to share that message with everybody so they understand how we got to this point. But you got to believe. You got to believe it can happen, and then you got to put action behind it. Ed, it is truly, truly an honor for you to be on our podcast, sir.
My blessing, fellas. Thank you for having me.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of the Define Your Brand podcast. I cannot emphasize to you enough two things. Number one, if you don't know Ed Mylett, shame on you. Get to know him right now and make sure you're maxing out every single day you're doing in your life. I want you to get over to iTunes and not only download and subscribe to the Define Your Brand podcast and share us a review on this show, but I want you to also show my main man, Ed Mylett, some love as well. And download and subscribe to the Ed Mylett Show. Once again, we love doing what we do here on the Define Your Brand podcast. And Ed, we thank you so very much for your time and for being a guest with us today.